Mary Beth, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
Sober since 1994, Mary Beth wrote From Junkie to Judge, One Woman's Triumph Over Trauma and Addiction. She speaks, trains, writes about substance abuse, trauma, and recovery. She's a director for the She Recovers Foundation and LifeRing Secular Recovery. So first and foremost, tell me about your story. How did you get started in all this?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, my story basically is unfortunately very common, which is that childhood abuse led to childhood addiction. And that's just a very common pathway. You know, I grew up with physical abuse, sexual abuse, started using drugs very early, was shooting methamphetamine by 17. I got sober till 32. So it was a really long haul for me. But in sobriety, you know, it wasn't just about my my drug recovery. It was also about my trauma recovery, which turned, you know, I had PTSD and severe anxiety. So those two recoveries are interconnected. Again, very common. And then in my recovery, the junkie to judge part is that, you know, as a 6 years sober, I went to Berkeley Law, and eventually at 20 years sober, I was appointed a federal judge. And now I'm retired. And as you mentioned, I speak, I write, I train, all in the substance use, trauma, mental health recovery space.
That is more than a handful.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you've lived at both ends of the spectrum in life. I really wonder, what did rock bottom for you feel like? Was there like an epiphany or a specific moment where you're like, it's time to put on a fight and do a 360?
Well, I'll say, I will caveat that with, we don't encourage people to wait for a horrible rock bottom. Like, let's address this problem sooner, because, you know, people might not survive long enough. But certainly for me, I did have sort of the stereotypical rock bottom in that, you know, I've been using for 20 years. I was having physical problems. I was sort of emotionally, you know, exhausted and helpless and feeling very trapped. And my partner was ready to throw me out. And this is all at 32. So it was sort of that combination of things. It wasn't one thing. Sometimes, you know, somebody gets a DUI and it's like the light bulb moment. But for a lot of us, it's more of a wearing down process. And that's what it was for me. It was a wearing down process. And at that point, I really couldn't move any, you know, in any direction. I was so debilitated. And so that's when I finally said, you know, maybe I ought to go to rehab.
No, right. But it's like the more you're caught into this, the harder it becomes to pull yourself up and get your life together. And I guess what I'm asking is, how and where did you find the courage to really make that shift and turn around? And that would apply to hopefully anyone listening struggling with any sort of trauma or addiction.
That's right. And I'll say it was a process. It's not like I walked into rehab thinking I'm going to get sober and be perfect at sobriety and everything's going to work out great. I mean, that's not how I started. That's not how most of us start. I started thinking, maybe I ought to try this. Maybe I can figure out how to do better. Maybe not even stop using, because I didn't think that was possible, but find a way to not be this bad, to not have my life be this chaotic, to not be using at this level. And I knew that the trauma was underneath it. And I thought, you know, maybe I can start to work on that. So it wasn't like I walked in there feeling strong and powerful and courageous. It was that I went in there feeling very exhausted and thinking that this was sort of like a shot, you know, a slight shot in my mind, but a shot at trying to build a positive life and get out of this hole, dig myself out. And it was over time that I started to see other people who had sort of succeeded, that had similar histories to mine. And as I started to do the work and see progress, that's when I started to feel more confident that at least it was on the table for me to recover, that at least it was a possibility. And then that sort of hope helped me do the hard work of early recovery. And over time, you know, I got more and more confident. And over time, my foundation got stronger and stronger through a lot of different types of effort, but a lot of work.
Amazing. So Mary Beth, someone listening to this, suffering with trauma, with abuse, with addiction, what would be the first piece of advice you'd give to them to help them turn their life around for the better?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is really thinking about what you might need. So for example, if people have trauma, they often have post-traumatic stress disorder. They often have anxiety or depression or other things going on. And so part of it is to sort of think about the whole picture and not just try to work on one side of it or the other. It's much more effective to address everything from the beginning. You're going to have a better chance of success. If you have a substance problem and another mental health disorder, you need to address both. And so that can really be about finding the right treatment provider. Not everybody has to go inpatient treatment like I did. Sometimes you can find a good therapist who has expertise in addiction and trauma. There's outpatient programs. There are support groups like She Recovers is not just for substance recovery, but also for trauma recovery and mental health. And so it's sort of like looking at where is the problem and seeing what resources you can access to try to get the help that that you think you need.
Right. So when you mention multiple pathways to recovery, what does dual diagnosis mean and how does that impact someone's recovery journey?
Yeah, I mean, the new recognition, and I started my work in 94. I've been sober since 94. And today, and I did what we would today call more individual recovery plan. In other words, for sobriety, there's 12 steps, which is like Alcoholics Anonymous and other anonymouses, but there are other programs on that side. You know, there's Life Ring Secular Recovery or She Recovers. There's sometimes people, as I mentioned, have a mental health disorder and an addiction. Addiction, by the way, is a mental health disorder. It's right. called substance use disorder. It is a mental health disorder, but dual diagnosis means you have more than one that you need to work on. Some people, may need to work on things that are physical as well. Some people may want to do meditation or yoga or some kind of mindfulness. Some people are more focused on support groups. Others want to work with a therapist or some people need medication. So it's really multiple pathways is really the idea that there's no right approach that will work for everyone. It's really about sort of trying things out and seeing what fits you and seeing what it makes is most comfortable and seems most effective and doing that. And also, sometimes you have to adjust the plan over time. Usually you have to adjust the plan over time, but it's also about those of us with long-term recovery being humble and not thinking that because this way worked for me, that you have to do it my way. You know, you don't have to do it my way. My way is a way for me to share what worked for you to consider, but it's not a template that you have to follow.
Right. Sometimes when someone suffers from the issues that you're describing, it's not only seen as a problem for them, it can greatly affect the life of everyone around them. Now, what advice would you give to a family member or friend when someone they care about and someone they love is struggling from substance abuse?
Yeah, that's a common question that I get. So I'll say this. A lot of people have heard about this tough love approach, or they see it on those intervention shows where people are told, you're going to the treatment facility I picked for you, and you're going there today. Okay. Those approaches, they work for some people, but they don't work for most people. There is very poor data, supportive data for that. So the current evidence-based approach for friends and family is called CRAFTS, Community Reinforcement and Family Training. And there's a really excellent book that is readily available, such as on Amazon, called Beyond Addiction, and it's based on CRAFT techniques. And CRAFT is more about positive reinforcement. It's more about not negative reinforcement, but positive. Noticing when the person you love who's struggling makes any steps in a positive direction. Having honest conversations when you're not angry or frustrated to talk about, you know, what are the drugs doing for you? What could we try to find to meet that need in a different way? Are you interested in treatment? I mean, it can be helpful for the family to do some research and come back and say, here's some options for you to consider. That's a very different attitude than you're going here because I said so, you know.
Right.
Kraft also talks about the need of the friend or family member to take care of their own needs because it is a trauma on the family. It is a stress on the family. And so it's important that that you find support and help for yourself as well as for your loved one who's struggling with substances.
Right. It's interesting you say that the tough love approach is evident. It just doesn't really have a lot of evidence to support it. But I feel like that becomes the result of just despair and frustration, because a lot of times people do take the first approach of doing it in a loving and kind manner, and they see that doesn't work either. Right. And it's not that the person doesn't want to improve. It's that they're imprisoned by their own mind. And it's a fight internally that's really hard for them to win alone. And the kind route doesn't work. The tough route doesn't work. So I appreciate you providing another perspective, because people can just find themselves oscillating between those two options. And it could be a false dichotomy. Right. And it sounds like it is.
Well, and you have to, I mean, you can't create a timetable for your loved one. There are things you can do to encourage them in the positive direction, but you're not going to be able to set the timetable. It just isn't going to be an effective approach. But that, a lot of the frustration comes from fear, right? I mean, look, I am a friend and family member too. Everybody I know that's sober, we are the family member as to someone else, right? My sister struggled with addiction. My best friend died of a heroin overdose. I understand how hard it can be. So it is understandable that people get frustrated or angry, or that there's a lot of emotional intensity. But at the same time, even though we can understand it, it doesn't mean it's going to be effective. And so that's part of why you need to get the help that you need for yourself. Like, there are support groups for friends and family. 12 Steps has Al-Anon. LifeRing has friends and family meetings. Smart Recovery has friends and family meetings. There's a bunch of options. And that can really help the friend or family member get ideas and suggestions, but also just be with people who understand their pain and understand what they're going through. And that can help help with some of the intense emotions to just feel supported and understood by other people going through the same thing.
I want to talk about Mary Beth for just a moment. So your life seems like I mentioned earlier, you've lived at both extremes. And I want to talk about you being a judge, a federal judge. How do you feel your past has affected the way you see your work life as a federal judge, how it helped you deal with people that were in front of you that you had to make a decision towards, you know, the whole empathy aspect, the whole just having an understanding of people's struggles. I truly wonder how that affected your role as a federal judge.
Yeah. So I am retired now, just for to be clear about that. But but I was a judge, an administrative law judge federally. So mostly I did Social Security cases. And so a lot of the people that appeared before me had mental health disorders and or substance use disorders. And so it really was, there was specific law that I had to apply, agree with it or not, you know, I had to apply it. But you're right, it was about not being judgmental, about their not being able to sort of just, you know, shake off these conditions, like, you know, at the drop of a hat.
Right.
Being able to ask the questions I needed to ask, but do it in a respectful way and in an understanding way, and to try to not make negative conclusions just because they were struggling with this pain, and that they might be doing it in a way that involves drugs or other sort of harmful behaviors. And so it showed up more in the interaction than in the outcome of the case, because the outcome of the case really was about what's the specific facts and the very clear law I had to apply about substance use. Yeah.
Very interesting. I want to talk about relapse for just a moment. So some of these problems, and, you know, people go through rehabilitation, whatever route they choose to take, and they manage to get their life in order. We tend to think somehow this problem goes away. And what I feel like is people who've got real serious addictions that they've overcome, it's a lifelong journey and it's a lifelong struggle. And how does someone, because here, regardless of their issue or not, life is a difficult journey. Mm-hmm. And things will get very, very difficult along the way. It's, you don't hope you don't. You expect it to, and you learn how to become resilient and deal with problems as they come along. How do, you know, how does it work with relapse when, you know, people's life just gets difficult? Do these problems creep back in their life? How do they prevent that? Is there a really high fail rate of people who do manage to just recover and then relapse again?
Yeah. So I'll say a couple things. One is that perfect abstinence from day one is rare. And I was not perfectly abstinent from day one. I used meth 3 times in my first 5 months. But think about how much better that was. I mean, I was using it every day. It was a vast improvement. And now I have 31 years of sobriety. So as far as relapse goes, the highest risk is in the earlier, is in the earliest period. So perfect abstinence is unusual. But that doesn't mean someone's not going to ultimately succeed. However, the data shows that the longer someone is sober, the less likely that they're going to have a relapse. Right. And so the lifelong thing, most people don't struggle for the rest of their life with a substance use disorder. So for example, for me, by 18 months, I felt pretty solid. And certainly by 2.5 years, I felt very solid. And I've never really struggled with substances after that. But to get to that point, it's about not just being sober, but about being recovered. And so in order to get that kind of stability, you often have to deal with what's underneath the drug use. Because if you don't, you're going to have a much higher likelihood of relapse. So are you dealing with the trauma? Are you dealing with your bipolar disorder? Are you dealing with whatever else was underneath? And then the other side of that as well is that people sometimes need medication to stabilize them, like some for alcohol and opioid use disorder, certainly for mental health. So are people being medicated so that they're stabilized and have the best chance of success? But I know we hear all this terrible data, like only 10% of people recover or something, right. But that's not true. That's really about each effort. In their lifetime, 75% of the people who have an addiction, a substance use disorder, under the official test, in the diagnostic manual, 75% will recover to the point that they no longer meet the criteria. And the other positive data point is that once somebody has 5 years of continuous sobriety, they have an 85% chance of never relapsing again. Hmm. And that 15% chance is not much higher than the risk of the general population developing a substance problem. So you're almost back to baseline. So time is on your side, but often it does involve doing not just sobriety work, but also working on other avenues to really heal yourself and give yourself the best chance.
Very interesting. Mary Beth, I admire your journey in life because many people have it difficult and they struggle to pick themselves back up and get their life together. And I think someone looking at your life story can really see how, you know, you can become a federal judge, which is truly fascinating, you know, from one end of the spectrum to the other. And I think you're in the perfect position to be advocating and helping people with these problems. So I applaud you for what you're doing. And how could people get in touch with you?
Yeah, so my book, again, From Junkie to Judge, is on Amazon and all the usual sites. My website is junkietojudge.com. And I've had like opinion pieces in the Wall Street Journal and the LA Times and others, and those are there. You can message me through my website if I could ever be of use or you have a speaking opportunity. And then I am on X and Blue Sky and LinkedIn. And I will say I do not argue with people on social media. I only post things that are related to substance use, addiction, trauma, mental health, and recovery from all of it. I post like the new studies that come out, articles on my recovery thoughts, and that's it. Like that's my lane and I stay in it. So I'm at @MaryBethO_ on X, and I'm Mary Beth O'Connor on Blue Sky, and I'm also on LinkedIn.
Mary Beth O'Connor, thank you for your time and wisdom. I appreciate it.